This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chaz, and you're listening to my good friend Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 399. Wow, episode 400 comes out next week. And as most of you know, I got a nice interview set up for next week. Possibly even several voicemails. Going to answer some listener questions that have come in recently. And I want episode 400 next week to be about you, the listener. It's going to come out on Christmas Day. Now, I know most of you will be celebrating Christmas with your families, as you should. But when you get a chance, remember, there'll be a new episode of the Handgun World Podcast that will be available. This week, I would like to talk about shooting doctrine. Actually, I want to talk about avoiding people that are stuck on a certain doctrine, a certain way of shooting. And I'll get, you know, into that and kind of give you some opinions. This is going to be kind of an opinion episode. Just kind of me talking about some things that I've been observing lately. Most of you know I'm really just an everyday guy. In fact, I'm headed on a business trip in the Handgun World mobile studio right now. I'm going out to make some sales calls because I'm working like crazy this week and next week. I'm going to take some time off between Christmas and New Year's. By the way, I'm going to take a week off at not even really thinking much about guns or podcasts or anything between Christmas and New Year's. So there will not be a show that will release on New Year's Day. There will not be one releasing on Sunday, New Year's Day. The first episode of 2017 will be on January 8th. Just thought I would let you know that. Going to take a little time off. I like to do that towards the end of the year just to get myself geared up for the next year. Now, I know that most of you who listen to this, you carry every day, or you should be carrying every day. I've gone on endlessly about why it's a good idea to carry every day. If you do have to use your gun in self-defense, please realize there's a second fight that you're going to have to win. After the gunfight, you got to win the fight in the legal system. And the legal system can be pretty nasty, folks. It can be very, very nasty. Most of you know what happened, if you've been listening for a while, to Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. He didn't even use his gun. Didn't even present his gun, but he was hit with tens of thousands of dollars of legal fees just to clear his good name. So consider joining the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. The Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. You'll help out the Self-Defense Radio Network, of which this podcast is part of. And you just use the tracking code Paul Lathrop or 15625. 15625 or Paul Lathrop. And if you can't remember all this, just check the show notes at handgunworld.com. By the way, I put everything in the show notes now. All kinds of discount codes, tracking codes, even links to the guests that I interview and talk to and things like that. Or if I talk about products, I like to put links. So a great resource is handgunworld.com. All you got to do is go there and look at the show notes for every podcast posting and even for my Amazon store. Thank you, all of you who did your Christmas shopping through my Amazon store. So many of you have supported me and done that. It's a great way to financially support the Handgun World Podcast. And you don't even have to spend any extra money. How cool is that? While you're doing your Amazon Christmas shopping, just use the Handgun World Podcast Amazon store. And you can find a link to the store. Again, guess where? You got it. You can find a link in the show notes. You can find a separate page at Handgun World Podcast. And you can even put an app on your iPhone, which takes you right to the Handgun World Podcast Amazon store. Check my Facebook page. You'll find that app. You can just install that app on your phone. You'll find the directions on how to install the app. Just go to Handgun World Podcast Facebook page. And I repost it every once in a while to keep it fresh. All right, let's talk about shooting doctrine. I'm going to tell you about what I see out there quite a bit. What I see are a lot of instructors that teach that theirs is pretty much the only way of doing it. And if you don't do it their way, you're not going to be successful. And I think that's dangerous. And I think that that's also not a very good service to the shooting public. And I'll tell you why. No two people are the same. No two people have the same type of abilities. Everybody's got different hand sizes. Everybody has different levels of strength. Some people deal with disabilities and some don't. Some are more mobile and flexible than others. Some prefer different types of guns that fit their hand differently than others. Some people are constrained by budgets, and the gun they have is the gun they have. And so they may not be able to shoot it a certain way that an instructor teaches in his or her classes. And what I think is dangerous and irresponsible are instructors that will say, okay, you got to do it this way. You got to grip the gun this way. And you got to grip the gun a certain way with a certain amount of strength, or you won't be successful. Or you gotta extend your arms a certain way, or you gotta position your arms a certain way, or you're not gonna be able to make the hits. Or you gotta have a certain type of sight. And if you don't have a certain type of sight, well, then you're just not gonna be successful in shooting that gun. It's the list goes on and on and on of what you have to do. Now, let me share some suggestions with you. Again, these are just suggestions. I would not consider myself one of the top trainers, top firearms trainers in the country. There are a lot of people that do a lot better job than I do. I think I'm fairly decent as a trainer. And I'm not out there tooting my own horn saying that I'm the best that there is, because I know that that's not true. All right, I'm humble enough to know that that's just certainly not true. I have been fairly effective lately in the training, in the teaching that I've been doing for the last about 4 years now. I've been fairly effective in getting people to do things with a handgun that they didn't think that they were going to be able to do. Now, the way I do that is I identify what a person is capable of doing, and I help them build on that strength. And when I identify someone who has weaknesses, I try to show them how to improve those weaknesses a little bit, or maybe show them how to do something a little bit differently to make that weakness go away or to mitigate the limitations of their weakness. I'll explain. Sometimes I have students that are in my classes that are not real mobile, and we teach moving and shooting. So I will help that person position their body and do things with their body that will help them get off the X, for example, get away from the attack, get away from the line of fire. Even though they're not too mobile, we'll still show them how to accomplish, at least to a certain degree, maybe a limited degree, how to keep themselves from being shot, which I think is a very important part of a gunfight. Would you agree? If you got to defend yourself with a gun, hey, don't get shot or don't get stabbed or don't get beaten with that baseball bat that the bad guy is trying to use to end your life and orphan your children. Now, some people are really mobile, and so we'll help them build on that and show them different techniques on how to get them to be able to not only move real well, but return fire while they're moving. Return fire while they're moving. Now, some people have smaller hands and weaker hands. Sometimes we have people of all different walks of life that come to our classes, and some people can't grip a pistol like Ben Branham can. Okay? If you've ever trained with Ben, Ben's a big dude. And he's got big hands and he's a big strong guy. I can't grip a pistol like Ben can. Alright? So for me or for Ben to tell somebody, hey, grip it just like I do. Well, that's ridiculous because a lot of people can't do that. So, some instructors have such rigid shooting doctrine that they'll say, you got to have a death grip on this gun. I mean, if you don't grip this gun with a death grip, you know, it's you're not going to be successful. I think that that's not true. Now, you got to have a good grip on the gun. You got to have a good firm grip on the gun. I'll post a link in the show notes to Bob Vogel, a world champion shooter. And he talks about grip. The video is called Bob Vogel on Grip. And he even talks about not gripping the gun too hard because you'll lose a lot of dexterity in your trigger finger. Now, he talks about gripping it hard, and he talks about how he grips the gun and what he does. And I think your technique is just as important as the amount of pressure that you're putting on the grip. How you hold the gun, where you place your hands. You'll see that in Bob's video. I try to emulate Bob Vogel's grip as much as I can. I mean, I figure, hey, the guy has won, like, what, 9 or 10 world championships? And by the way, he shoots Glock pistols, which, you know, I'm a big fan of Glock pistols. So if Mr. Vogel has won lots and lots of championships doing it a certain way, I'm going to try to emulate it. Now, I can't do it exactly like he does it. Bob Vogel's a little bit more athletic. His hand size is a little bit different than mine. But I try. I try. Once I started using his technique, I did get a lot better. I used to grip it a little bit differently, and it's hard to describe here on an audio podcast. You got to go to my show notes for this episode, episode 399, and just click the YouTube link that I put on there, and it's called Bob Vogel on Grip, on gripping a pistol. You should take a look at it. Now, some people can't do that. I've had people come to classes, and I try to teach them that, and they just can't do it. For some reason, their wrists may not articulate a certain way. Their hands might be a lot smaller. They might be shooting a different type of pistol that doesn't allow them to grip it that way. So a good instructor learns to adjust. A good instructor learns how to get the student to adjust. We've had students in our class that for some reason they were taught that you got to have an absolute death grip on that pistol. And they were gripping it so hard they were starting to have tremors. They were shaking. I'm serious. They were shaking. They were trying to grip the pistol so hard. Now that's not good. That's not good having a shooter that's, you know, might be someone new. They might be a new shooter. They're nervous already. They're taking a class, right? You know, and they're tremoring. No, I'll go to that person and I'll say, hey, wait a minute. You know, let's change your gripping technique. Let's change the position of your hands a little bit. Let's use both hands to grip that pistol and grip it properly. Let's get as much hand on the pistol as we can for you, and then maybe you won't have to have a death grip on this thing and start causing yourself to shake. And they'll still be able to shoot and shoot well. So that's an example of not being real rigid in shooting doctrine, being able to adjust. A good instructor identifies. A good instructor is like a good teacher. A good teacher, those of you who are listening to this that are teachers, you probably know every student's different, right? Every student has different strengths. And you teach to that student's strengths. You help them maximize what they're good at. And then maybe help them raise their game just a little bit at the stuff that they're not good at. I mean, after all, let me ask you something, or let me get you to consider something here. If you go to a training class, whether it's a day, 2 days, 3 days, or a whole week, and you're paying good, hard-earned money to go listen and learn from an instructor, why not give that instructor the benefit of the doubt and open your mind a little bit and try what they're teaching? At least try it. If it doesn't work for you, okay, fine. Most of you know I like to live by a philosophy. Take the best and leave the rest. That's something I learned from my mentor when I was a very young man. Take the best and leave the rest. In other words, take what works for you and make it uniquely your own. Take what works for you and make it uniquely your own. And leave the rest. Throw it out. There might be some things that I say on this podcast that you say, oh, I like that. I'm going to take that. And then there might be some things that you don't like. That's fine. Throw those out. Leave the rest. Take the best of what I say, make it uniquely your own, leave the rest, throw it out. Everybody's like that. So you owe the instructor at least an open mind. That's what I think you owe the instructor, is an open mind. Now, when the class is over and you just simply don't like something that was taught or something's not going to work for you, don't use it. The chances are you're probably going to get one or two, maybe even more, really good ideas or really good techniques, or maybe you're going to get some coaching in some areas that really improve your shooting ability. And that makes the class worth it. So I think it's interesting when people, and I've seen this has happened to us in our classes, and I've seen it happen in classes where I've been a student and other students do this. This is what they do. They're shown a technique in class, and then they say something like, oh, well, you know, I've always been taught to do it this other way. I've always been taught to do it this other way. You see, they drank the Kool-Aid of somebody else's shooting doctrine. And because they drank that Kool-Aid of somebody else's shooting doctrine, they don't want to open their minds to try to learn to do it maybe a different way. Okay, maybe you were taught to do it a different way. How's that working for you? How's that working for you? If you think that there's an area of improvement, why don't you open your mind? Why don't you try what this instructor is teaching you in the class that you happen to be in right now and see if it works? Or maybe you can put both techniques together somehow. Or maybe you can compromise. Or maybe there's something that you can do, you know, a little bit that you learn from the instructor you're in, put that together with a little bit that you learn from the instructor that you learned from in the past, and put it together. Nobody has all the answers in shooting for you. You will get the answers by going to a lot of different training classes, learning a lot of different techniques, taking the best and leaving the rest, and figure out what works for you. And I'll tell you what will not make you a better shooter is if you don't get any training. That I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you that if you do not get any training, you will not improve as a shooter. I promise you that. I can't guarantee how a class is going to benefit you, but I can guarantee that you will not improve if you don't train and practice. You got to train and practice. By the way, I don't know if you know, there's two different, those are two different things. Training and practicing are two different things. I hope you know that. It's like anything else. It's like if you want to golf. It's like if you want to, you know, play football or baseball. Training is where you learn techniques and attitudes and skills that'll help you be successful. Practice is when you perfect those skills. When you practice them hundreds, thousands, or tens of thousands of times, and you practice them so much they become second nature. You get to the unconscious competent level where you don't even have to think about it. You just do it because you've practiced it so many times. Now, another point I want to make real quick, and then I'm going to take a quick break because I got to make a business call. It's okay to be unconventional as long as you can get the job done. It's okay to shoot in a little bit unconventional manner as long as you can get the job done. I remember, most of you know I'm a cheesehead. I was raised in Wisconsin. Born in New York City, but raised in Wisconsin, so I'm a huge Packer fan. And you know, whether you like the Packers or not, that doesn't matter about the point that I'm going to make. I remember when the Packers got Brett Favre in '93. They made a trade, and they got Brett Favre. And this kid named Brett Favre was very unconventional. Very unconventional. He didn't throw the same way that all quarterbacks threw the football. His attitude was unconventional. He was a gunslinger. You know, he was kind of a loose cannon out there. And a lot of people that are Packer fans, I remember this, it wasn't all that long ago, in 93, people were thinking, man, what did the Packers do? Why did they waste a draft choice, a good draft choice, picking up this renegade, this rebel, this maverick, this unconventional kid named Brett Favre? What a huge mistake. We all know that Brett Favre became one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. And he was not conventional. He was not your typical NFL quarterback. But what's a typical NFL quarterback? You know, think about it. Just because certain people have an idea and this mold, if you will, there's a mold that a typical NFL quarterback has to fit in, it doesn't mean that if they don't fit in that mold that they won't be successful. You know, the presidential election that we just went through here in the United States, the presidential election, Donald Trump was a very unconventional candidate. Donald Trump was not the kind of candidate that everyone thought that a presidential candidate should be. I'll admit it. I thought, oh man, this guy is so, he's so off. The way this guy operates, he's never going to be successful. He's not going to be successful. He's not going to pull this off. I'll raise my hand and I'll say I was one of those people that didn't believe because he was so unconventional. Guess what? Prove people wrong. There's always more than one way to do something. And just because somebody doesn't conform to conventional wisdom. Well, what's conventional wisdom? You know, there is a lot of conventional wisdom in the shooting community. You got to do it this way. You got to put your feet this way, a certain way. You got to put your arms a certain way. Should I relax my arms? Should I unlock my elbows? Or should I lock my elbows and go to full extension? The answer is yes on both. Do what works for you. Try them both. Try several thousand rounds shooting with your arms at full extension and your elbows locked. Some people can't do that. Some people, because of physical injuries, can't do that. Or because of limitations, they can't pull that off. So they have to bend their elbows ever so slightly. Try different things. You will figure it out, but you got to try different things and beware of shooting doctrine. Don't let somebody say to you, well, it's only got to be done this way. And if they do say that, say, okay, fine, and try it their way. And by the way, give it a good try. Don't just shoot 10 rounds and say, oh, well, that doesn't work for me. Try it for the entire class. And then after the class is over, go practice it as well for another several hundred or a thousand rounds before you make a decision. So after the break, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about practicing and trying what it is that you learned. I'll be right back.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. This is no doubt.
Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
Okay, I'm back for the second part of episode 399 of the Handgun World podcast. So continuing with the subject about shooting doctrine, also seems to be a doctrine of concealed carry. And people seem to subscribe to basically one of two camps, and that is either carrying behind your strong side hip or appendix carry. And it seems like people are pretty rigid about how they feel that others should carry. Some seem to have an open mind about this. I have gone back and forth. I've had moments where I have thought that appendix carry is going to only be the only way for me to carry. Lately, about the last year, I've been carrying outside the waistband behind my strong side hip at about 330. I've been carrying my Glock 19 in a wonderful Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster. Concealment Solutions is a sponsor, by the way. And if you use the coupon code SDRN, stands for Self Defense Radio Network, you get 10% off your order. So I've gone back and forth between appendix carry and strong side hip carry. I ordered a holster from Spencer Keepers. I ordered a Keepers Concealment appendix carry holster for my Glock 19, and I'm going to try that again too. Now, I think it's all right. I think it's okay as long as you practice and train. If you got one gun that you want to carry appendix and another gun that you want to carry strong side hip, and depending on which gun you're carrying that day, you can, you know, carry it in different spots. I'm not one of those that says same gun, same place every time. I don't subscribe to that. I think as long as you practice and train, do lots of dry fire practice, lots of draws. I'm not one that thinks that I'm going to forget where my gun is. You know, I mean, hey, I'm carrying a Glock 19 right now as I speak. And hey, I know it's there. I know it's there. I know exactly where it is. I know exactly what I have to do to draw that gun. Right now, it's in a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband holster at 330, about the 330 position behind my right side hip. And I've practiced drawing from that holster and presenting my gun thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And outside the waistband has proven to be very fast for me, very quick and very efficient. And this holster conceals this pistol very, very well with simply just a regular untucked shirt. So I've got no problem with it. I feel very confident that I'm not going to forget where that gun is when I have to draw it. But you're going to get these people. You're going to get people out there. You're going to get the YouTube experts and different instructors and things that are going to say, well, you always have to keep it in the same place every time. And you got to carry the exact same gun. I'm sorry, I disagree with that. I've shot competition matches, and I have been a student in many training classes, and I've done it both ways. I've done it appendix carry. I've done it, you know, strong side hip carry, and I have not had a problem either way as long as I practice with it. It's kind of like the argument about a thumb safety on a pistol. You know, you get those people that are ingrained into that shooting doctrine, okay? They say you can't have a thumb safety on a pistol. I used to be that way. And, you know, I reserve the right to change my mind, and I do change my mind. You know, I used to think that you were making a huge, huge mistake if you had a thumb safety on your pistol. As long as you want to marry that platform, I've always thought that that's okay. As long as you want to have a gun with a thumb safety and you want to get married to that platform. And what I'm saying is, if that's the only type of gun you carry is a gun with a thumb safety, and you train with that and you practice with that, you're probably going to be okay with that. Many, many thousands and thousands of people have used guns like that in self-defense, and it's worked for them because they've practiced it. What I'm not a big proponent of is switching back and forth between the different platforms. Like one day carrying a gun with a thumb safety, the next day carrying a gun with no safety, the next day carrying a double action gun, and the next day maybe carrying a gun where you have a thumb safety, but you got to push it up instead of pushing it down. You know, and people start doing a rotation like that, and they're carrying a different kind of gun every time. Now, that may cause some issues. But beware of the shooting doctrine and the concealed carry doctrine out there where people say you have to do it a certain way. It may work for them, but it might not work for you. And so I'm encouraging you to have an open mind, and I'm encouraging them to have an open mind, although they're going to be kind of rigid. I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, I was called out by another podcaster, and I was kind of singled out by another podcaster that was criticizing my mode of appendix carry when I'm in my vehicle. And you know, they made a particular podcast about it and talked about it and thought that it was not a real good idea the way that I carry appendix when I am in my vehicle. Well, then just recently I saw that instructor on YouTube and, you know, reviewing a gun. I think it was a Glock 43 review or something like that. And he was carrying an appendix. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, and they made a whole issue about the dangers of appendix carry and why they were not big fans of appendix carry. They made a whole podcast episode on that, and then I see him on YouTube appendix carrying, and I'm thinking, I'm scratching my head going, what? Well, you know what? What it means is that people change their mind. People change their mind, and it's okay. I think that's okay. Just be careful not to single somebody out, or be careful not to criticize somebody for doing something that works for them, because it might work for you at some point. You know, there are other instructors out there that flat out ban appendix carry from their classes. Now, that's their right. That's their prerogative. People have the right to teach a class any way they want, and they have a right to discriminate a you know, on students that they have coming to their class. They can ban anything they want from coming to their class. I just think that that's very closed-minded. I think that if you've got students that can make that work and that they can demonstrate that they can safely appendix carry, and I emphasize, if they can safely demonstrate and prove that they can appendix carry, well, what's the big deal? But again, a person has that right. But that's where I think there's a fine line there between shooting doctrine or concealed carry doctrine and being open-minded to what can work for people. Because, hey, if somebody trains and practices, I don't see why appendix carry can be, I don't see why it's any less safe than any other mode of carry. I mean, gosh, there's people out there that shoulder carry. You know, they carry in a shoulder holster. Well, you know, there are people that carry in a shoulder holster, and the muzzle of that gun while it's in the holster, it's muzzling people around them. And so I'm thinking, what happens when they draw that gun? What if they accidentally put their finger on the trigger and accidentally fire that gun when they're drawing it? Where is that going? Where is that bullet going to go? Now, you could say, well, Bob, that applies to anything, whether it's strong side hip or whether it's appendix or whether it's ankle carry or pocket carry. If you accidentally press the trigger, the bullet can go anywhere. And yeah, that's the point. That's the point. So that's why I don't think that any one method of concealed carry is any more dangerous or should be any more forbidden than anything else. That's just kind of my personal opinion on that. But, you know, again, you've got people that are kind of stuck in their doctrine, so to speak. So I'm going to wrap this episode up pretty soon, but I think, you know, I may have ruffled some feathers. I might have upset some people, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It's, again, unfortunately, in the shooting community, I see basically two different types of people and instructors. I see those that are rather closed-minded and stuck to a certain doctrine, and then I see those who are quite a bit open-minded and willing to try just about anything if it's going to work and if it's going to be safe and effective and if it's going to work. You know, it's kind of like with red dot sights on pistols. I saw on Facebook recently a discussion about red dot sights on pistols. I just ordered one. I just sent one of my Glock 19 slides over to Suarez International, and I'm having a Trijicon RM07 model put on that. And I just joined the Red Dot Pistol Club, and I'm going to take John Payne's Red Dot Pistol School in February in San Antonio. I encourage you, if you have a red dot sighted pistol, to join me at that class. I think it's going to be a fantastic class. Well, there are all kinds of people that are really stuck into their shooting doctrine and says, nah, no way. It makes no sense to have a red dot pistol or a red dot sight on a pistol. And they're just stuck in the doctrine that, no, that's not acceptable. Yet they got red dots on their ARs. They got red dots on their rifles, but oh no, they're against putting them on their pistols. Well, why? Why can't it be just as effective on a pistol as it is on a rifle? And, you know, it's, look what Glock is doing. As Jack Rumbaugh and I discussed in the last episode, look what manufacturers like Smith & Wesson M&P and Glock and FN, they're manufacturing pistols with the slides already set up to accept red dot optics. Because they're becoming popular, they're becoming effective. The technology is getting better and better each year. It's going to get mainstream. It's going to be mainstream. It's just a matter of time. But, you know, if you want to be one of those closed-minded individuals that says, well, no, I didn't learn to shoot that way. And, you know, back in the 80s when I was learning how to shoot, or back in the 60s and 70s when I was learning how to shoot, there wasn't no red dots on no pistols, and we still got it done. Well, okay, if you want to be that kind of person, then go ahead and be that kind of person. But this isn't the 60s or the 70s or the 80s. This is 2016, almost 2017. And things change, and technology changes, and I would just strongly recommend that you have an open mind and consider some change and give it a try. If it doesn't work for you, fine, but give it a try. That's pretty much all I'm saying. All right, well, let me just say that there's still some time to get me a voicemail for episode 400. I'd love to find out how you like the Handgun World podcast, what you're learning from it, some comments and things like that. You can be on episode 400. All you got to do is call 210-646-1727 and give me, 3 minutes worth of feedback on how you like the Handgun World podcast. Or maybe you got a specific question. My guest in episode 400 is going to be none other than the one and the only Ben Branham. And we're going to have a good time for episode 400. And Ben and I are willing to answer questions. So if some of you have some questions and you want to call them in, 210-646-1727. You can always email me, bob@handgunworld.com. Follow me on Facebook at Handgun World Podcast on Facebook. I'm Handgun World on Twitter. You can follow me that way if you want. And I just want to say thank you, folks, for giving me the opportunity in advance here. I'll thank you to do 400 episodes or 399 thus far. Episode 400 is coming up. I'm very humbled. I think that's an incredible opportunity. It is an honor. It is an honor to be able to have enough listeners to keep doing this and making this show worthwhile 400 times. Wow. I just think that I never thought that I would make it to even a couple hundred episodes, much less 400. But I appreciate everything that you folks do. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate those of you who support, and even those of you that give me emotional support through all the health problems I've had and the family health problems that I'm currently dealing with. It means a lot to me, folks. Thank you very much. So with all that said, let me just close by saying, carry your guns. Carry them every day, no matter what it is. Oh, by the way, again, more on doctrine. Don't fall into the shooting doctrine that, well, that 7-shot, 9-millimeter gun is worthless. Because you got to have at least, 15, 16, 18 rounds in your pistol. Really? Well, you know what? If that 7-round 9-millimeter is what you have when the crap hits the fan, because you couldn't carry anything else that day, then that gun is worth a lot. It is going to be a lifesaver. Okay? I prefer to carry my Glock 19 with 16 rounds on the gun and a 15-round backup magazine. That's what I prefer. But if I can't carry it, whatever I'm carrying at that point is superior to the Glock 19 that I didn't carry. All right, folks, I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. I'll talk to you next week for episode 400. Goodbye. Good.